I was going to
4 o'clock?
Yep.
Okay, I got a question on the phone. I can talk about that.
You got the 2 hours, the line to
take it. Okay. All right, we'll try to honor that. That's good. So, first I want to say that I guess you guys, those of you who heard the podcast, know that I feel like we should be taller or something, but again, we want to sit here a minute. Fern and Audrey, we used as pseudonyms on the podcast, and the reason we do that is not because we're weirded out if you know our real name.
Mm-mm.
It's because the group of people that we minister to, it's important to them that we have some place of safety for them so that they can go to and know that it's not an exposed place, and that we're, so you know my name, you look it up on the internet, of course, because I'm on the internet, everyone is, and then you know where we are, where we live, where that, and we want to be able to tell our folks that we love and come to see us that we try at least to take a step back so that we can be in a hidden place so that they can stay hidden. And I want to explain to you, for those of you who don't know what we do. We minister to the severely traumatized. We minister to those who come out of Satanism, Luciferianism, and trauma-based mind control, which is what our government does on some folks. It's a MK Ultra, Operation Paperclip is all still going on, not under those names. I don't know what the names are, but Audrey and I work 40 hours a week with people that have been traumatized and severely hurt. How they do that, the perpetrators do that, is that they hurt a child so that the child's mind splits and becomes what used to be called multiple personality, and what is now called dissociative identity disorder. You see the movies out there, the others Split and all the others, Born Identity. When the Born Identity gets their memories back, they come to find us. We're not on the web. We're not on, we don't market. We don't do anything. And we work 40 hours a week in ministry. People find us, and they come to us from all over the world. And so where we are, we have a 5-bedroom home that we rent, and people come and they stay for 4 or 5 days. We do ministry. They go back home. We touch base with Skype. So they come back again. And that's what we do. We are constantly working with the severely traumatized on all levels. We work with the spiritual component. We work with the psychological component, and we deal with the physical body kind of stuff, too. So, in the first podcast that we did with Mike, we kind of went over what dissociation is, why what we do is different, and those kind of, like, details of what we do. Oftentimes, when we tell people what we really do, because most of the time we'll say we work with people, survivors of those who have been human trafficked, because that is probably not the right word, palatable, but that's the Vogue ministry now. I'm not saying it shouldn't be, it's just everyone knows about that now. And mm-hmm. And I would say, I don't know what you would say, Audrey, but I would say almost 90% of those human trafficked have suffered trauma-based mind control, TBMC, trauma-based mind control. The mind gets split in those places.
Yeah.
So
definitely.
for us to say we work with those who've been human trafficked, it really is it's true. It's what we do. It goes a little bit more deeper than that, because we're looking at not only helping the person to not go back into a oppressive situation and a handled position, place, but also for them to think and get their mind back so they understand who they are, their heart, they understand the language of what looks like chaos in their life so that they can live with a place of understanding who they are. And the word we would use is integrated. But I know that that word, for some people, creates a thing that, oh, if there are multiple people, then they get integrated into one. And that's not how we use the word integrated. We use it more that the word integrated in that they have an understanding of life awareness, and they can live life with a coherence of thought and a narrative of, this is my history and this is who I am and this is where I'm going. And that's what that would be. So in the podcast, the first podcast, we talked about dissociation, we talked about trauma-based mind control, and we talked about our technique is not a technique of deliverance when we're working with someone. That our we're very aware of the spiritual dynamic, but it's not the spiritual dynamic that is immediately holding them in a place of chaos. What's chaos is that they don't know themselves, and they're not supposed to know themselves. So, but there is a spiritual dynamic to it. And so, typically, by the time someone gets to us, that is through the church, typically they've had secular counseling and they've had prayer ministry done.
Deliverance.
And deliverance. Okay?
At least 10 years worth of some type of therapeutic or deliverance process.
And what we have found is when the deliverance model to working with someone coming out of severe trauma, the deliverance model adds a layer of spiritual abuse that takes us about 6 months to work through.
Yeah.
Especially for someone who is trauma-based mind control, and because of their multiplicity, the little gals inside were misunderstood to be demons, so there was an assault to try to cast them out. And what that does is that Christian prayer minister, deliverer, pastor, priest, whatever, just really then sits in the role of the perpetrator, because you've just assaulted another human being. And so we're not against any of those other modalities. I've done this 18 years, and Audrey's with me for 14. We've just found that it doesn't work well. There's a different way to do it, to be very kind and caring and show the love of God to the people who are the most severely traumatized. So one of the other things I see that's a myth in the body of Christ, unfortunately, is that the people that typically come into the churches and they're in chaos, they're messy, they have a different perspective on God than what the church does, in the place of that they, you know, worship Lucifer sometimes and stuff and that kind of stuff. That's a little annoying. Sometimes the church gets scared or something. But what we find is that there is this, and even in the Christian modalities, we're not live streaming this. I'm being real honest with you about what we see. Even in some Christian modalities, what they do is they take this and they say, okay, this Christian modality works great here. You're going to get a lot of inner healing, but don't use it for DIDs. Don't use it for trauma-based mind control. Don't do this. You're going to hurt your, you know, you're going to get into deep waters and you're not. Audrey and I don't see it that way. We see that we don't even like the term inner healing. We use the word sanctification because I think all of us are continuing to know the love of God. All of us, when we use any defensive posturing in relationships that we love, when I use a defense mechanism and I get real short and curt with Audrey, then I'm in a defensive posture. I've held my heart and my love from her. And it's in that place the Holy Spirit says, why aren't you living in love? Why defensive posturing? And I think it's in that place that as we grow in maturity in Christ and we see that without spot or wrinkle, we can stay in the love of God and we can have relationship and I don't have to use defensive posturing against my brothers and sisters in Christ. Someone who's trauma-based mind control, they were wounded in relationship. That's what causes the mind to split. Relational ruptures that never heal. Confusion to a child that doesn't make sense. Emotions that are so large, you don't know what to do with them. And so in the relational ruptures, in the relationship, they build a defensive posture, and that's how they live life. And so the sanctification process, as we walk it through with them, is for them to know themselves, to be able not to be afraid of themselves, to start to be able to ask the question, do I need this defensive posture? And we let them make the decision. If we make the decision for them, we're like the handlers that used to handle them and mind control them and stuff. And so that, in a nutshell, is what we do.
I might want to mention, and you tap into a lot of research as well, and you go off and get referrals from clinicians.
Absolutely.
But again, the spiritual dimension doesn't take a back seat.
Correct. Yes, that's true. He just said that. We really do. Neither Audrey and I have mental health credentials. We're not licensed therapists. We're not pastors. We just love people, and we know how to help them. And so we really do stay on the cutting edge of what the trauma research is out there. We feel that's really, really important. You know, keep thinking. That's what this is about. And we love Jesus very much, and it's the cross of Christ is really where everyone comes to. Even if and it's Mike's teaching when we met him in 2010. It was that teaching that changed the way we ministered, because while we weren't in a deliverance mindset even at that time, my background is charismatic. And so I always call it charismaniac. So because it was nuts. And the folks that we worked with would say to me, it's not working. You know, and so we listened. And so I'm going to tell you a little story about when we first met with Mike. So in the charismatic movement, there is this thing going on currently that you do discernment. And discernment, you can discern whether or not it's an angel or a demon or a cherub or a seraphim or this. It's kind of weird. And I'm just telling you where we were at. We're not there now. But anyway, so there was things like, so in the ministry session, it would be, you know, oh, well, it's Shining One. And then we were taught that what you do next is you have a court of high appeals.
A
court of heavenly appeals. And so you bring all these entities into the court and you go through Daniel 9, and it's anyway, and the survivors were so, they were so gracious.
They want to be healed. Yeah. They'll do anything.
But they would say to us, you know, this isn't working. And so we were okay with the fact that all the Jesusification, and that's what we call it, you know, the Jesusification stuff didn't work. And so we were okay with that. So we had a fight. So we invited Mike to come talk to us, and we were the first group of Christians. He says that we were not the scholarly group of people, but we're still very smart. I just want you to know that. But
this is the first time I talked about anything that I do other than the scholarly.
Yeah.
It was these two.
Yeah. And so he came, and so it was lunchtime, and he had just given what he kind of gave you this morning, a little bit more detail. And it was lunchtime, and we were just kind of picking his brain. We had met in a hotel in one of their conference rooms, a little hotel. And in the hotel room, there's a stack of toilet paper. I'm not kidding. And he's kind of slouched down on the stack of toilet paper at lunch, you know. And of course, I go up to the marker board, and I go, now, Mike, listen, for most of our people, a lot of times, there's a queue through the brethren, and then there's shining wine, Benihel, Ice, and Chop Car, and then there's Satan, and then there's this. And Mike's looking at me like this. And I said, so what's the difference of all that? And he goes, what does it matter? At the cross, it was taken care of. And I'm like, you don't get it, Mike. There's different ones that we have to take to the heavenly court. And I need your input on this. And he goes, it doesn't matter. And then he went into this, like, geek lapse of going into empirical research of that Egyptian deities. Yeah, would like, you could have the same deity, but the different god in Samaria, a different name in this, a different name in that. And, like, he's just seeing this all as, like, the same thing, different name, who cares? We're like, no, it matters who you bring to the heavenly court. Like, I could bring anyone to the heavenly court. Okay. Mike was really kind. We stayed friends. Yeah. We stayed friends all this time. And he comes back every year, and we love him. But, so, and he says now, Sharon, if I would have understood your question, I would have answered it differently. I said, that's right. I don't know how to ask these questions. All I know, you can see how whacked out my theology was, and just help me, brother. And so one of the things at that meeting with Mike, we had just friends that would, you know, you lose a lot of friends when you do weird stuff, you know. And but friends that will stay, and the people, you know, that were there, that hung in there, you know, and we had some survivors that we ministered to. They were there too. And you remember that triangle that Mike showed you up there with Yahweh, sons of God, and that. And then Mike said, you know, why are you fighting? You know, that don't you know you will rule over angels, kind of thing. And that means we just displaced that whole thing. Every survivor in that group said, I know that place. Internally, when back in session, they go, I know what it's like to be held in captivity by the sons of God, the mean guys. They saw maybe two, but they saw that they were, that they displaced the sons of God, and they saw why they were so hated. And so it started, the first time it started making sense to them. It didn't give why they were so brutally abused and why that they were experimented on like lab rats. It didn't bring the why. But they saw that there was a way out when they saw that this is what it was like. And so every one of those survivors that we work with, they understand divine counsel much more than we did. And so we started diving into Mike's stuff and listening to them. And so we saw that we just drifted into good theology, understanding how trauma affects the brain, and started working with the person to know the person. And the reality of it is, all we started doing was helping them understand how they can image Yahweh, that they're an imager, and they're a human. They are human, and they can be human. So we teach them how to navigate loss, how to understand emotions instead of dissociate, how to hold an emotion, what an emotion feels like in their body. They understand whether or not it's a cosmic thought that is, you know, pressing them, whether it's a program thought, something that has been conditioned into them through trauma, or whether it's a thought of just their own humanity inside talking. We taught them the language of their heart. See, so if someone's cutting, instead of being freaked out about it, it's language, it's communication. And so you learn that language of the heart rather than dissociate from all of that. And so that's how we shifted. We heavily used the divine counsel material as far as the understanding of divine counsel. They get this counsel thing. We use the imaging understanding, and one of the words Mike uses is, what you didn't earn by merit, you can.
Yeah. That which cannot be, you know, achieved by moral perfection can't be lost by moral merit.
Yeah, and that understanding of grace in that place. And that's how we work with some folks, with the folks that come to see us. Whether it's a simple neurotic to someone who's trauma-based mind control. We use the same, it's the same place of sanctification. We don't call it inner healing. Because I don't think God looks at us and say, oh my gosh, I've got to fix them, they need healed. I think he understands that humans are humans. And if we know how to embrace our humanity, embrace what the cross did, and just stay human instead of trying to reach for perfection, we're going to be okay. We just need to be human, and let's just, you know, welcome that place of humanity. And so along the way, one of the other things that we learned was in spiritual warfare, instead of rising up in a militant fashion to grab the name of Christ and start our swords chopping, we found that it was best to not be drawn into the arena of fear. Because most of what we saw in deliverance ministry was, oh my gosh, there's a demon here, and you have to all of a sudden get real aggressive. That's fear. Your nervous system just went on. Sympathetic nervous system just tramped the gas. You got cortisol, you got adrenaline, you got everything. And guess what that is? A fear response.
For yes. A power encounter with spiritual warfare.
Yeah.
You're entered into their realm. They are in fear.
Yeah. So what you do is you just stay in the love of God. And that's why if you haven't read Mike's fiction, this isn't an advertisement, but it really is. If you haven't read his fiction, you have to read The Facade first, which is really good, tells you to think. And then the next, The Portent, goes into a spiritual warfare scene with the bad guy that is, Mike sets it up beautifully. It's in the frailness of humanity resting in the love of God. I mean, his character doesn't have a prayer to win, okay? And that is exactly where we go when we see something of higher level that rises in someone and taunts. And what that looks like, it's always hubris. It's always very, you can feel that it wants to draw you out into that place of fear or into that place of, I belong to Jesus kind of place. And if you get drawn into that, it'll happen. And you just stay back in the love of God and just understand and know. And what we do is we stay connected and we help that survivor understand and know. What does that feel like? Have you felt that before? Do you know what that is? Because for the little child inside that had to connect to that thing, that defilement is so normal for them that they don't know it. They think it's them. So we do differentiation. What is human? What is not? And we stay connected to their heart. Meanwhile, that thing is trying to draw us out. We just ignore that taunting and go to the heart of the child inside.
I want to mention how this is different than possession. And then there's a couple different.
How it's different.
This is all processed.
Yeah. Three ways that we see in a survivor. Now, let me go back, and I want to explain to you what I mean about the survivor, the child inside the survivor, the heart of the child, had to connect to something for safety. I know that would sound like that's crazy, but, and this is there kids in here? There's no kids in here, is there? Okay, this is harsh. I'm going to be real honest with you, okay? When someone is sitting in front of us, and the person can be 38, 42, whatever, and their little kid comes out and they say, well, I have to stay connected to that because that's my safety. And I'm not gonna try to change that mindset. I'm going to say, well, I am glad that you really worked hard to stay safe. Let's see how that's working, you know. And so oftentimes the narrative of that child inside is that they've been laid on an altar, they're getting raped, and they say to the little child, call for Jesus to come. So the little girl would reach out, start saying, Jesus come, Jesus come. Guy comes out dressed as Jesus and ejaculates all over the child. Now they say, call for
Lucifer.
Huh?
Lucifer.
Lucifer. Call for Lucifer. And then all of a sudden, there's power. She doesn't feel the pain anymore. She is above it all. She feels, you know, she hates the people doing it. There feels like the power in that. And she's like, this worked. Because it's a no-win situation. There's no vote on that. Parents brought her. And so for that child, even in that 38-year-old body, she doesn't know any different. No one ever taught her. In trauma stays there, fires and wires together. So even in that place where prayer ministers would start a deliverance session there, you're taking away what that little girl believes is her safety. You just became her enemy. And guess what? The perpetrators told her that you were going to try to do that. So you just walked right into it. So do you see how, and let me explain a part, because I don't want that to be an ethereal mystery for you, okay? I guess you guys didn't realize what you signed up for this afternoon, did you? You're all like this.
Yeah, does anyone need a second to process that? You're all good.
You're all good? I want Audrey to tell you what the definition of a part is. This is why you, in prayer ministry, you just don't pray that parts go away or integrate. Okay? Because I want to explain to you what that is. Go ahead.
It is an organized, integrated neural network pathway of thought and mood. That means that when a child's being hurt, the mind's psychological defense is organic for one and psychological. So the little child's getting hurt and it's too overwhelming for her or him that the mind splits and part of her knows and part of her doesn't know. And these are organized, integrated neural network pathways that are not connected.
Here's the one that knows back here in limbic, and here's the one that not knows up in the front.
So the little girl can go to kindergarten and still learn her ABCs and how to read and write. And then when nighttime comes and daddy comes in the room, this one knows what's going to happen.
Okay. But they're both separate neuronets. They're not together. And so to have a prayer minister pray, Lord, integrate me, you need the physical therapy of your mind, you know, to be able to know yourself and to be able to integrate. These are separate because of a conflict. That's all.
And the conflict is, I won't survive knowing that daddy's bad because I'm powerless. He's bigger than me. So she has to know. And this one goes away and doesn't know. And she says, she's too weak to know that. And we have to survive. So, and I'll go back here so she can do daytime. So the conflict isn't just about the trauma she lives through. It's internal. She's too weak to know. So the amnesic walls get reinforced. Now, programmers or darkness will use that natural psychological defense against a survivor. So they create more and more amnesic walls to use them for whatever they want.
So when we're working with someone who is traumatized like this, one of the first things that we do is we let them know we get it. It's okay. And we're not going to try to tell them how to do anything because they've done a great job. They survived something that was unsurvivable. And then we start helping them see what is the belief about themselves, because that's really where the pain is, because the event is over. But the pain is what they believe about themselves. And that takes me to one of the questions that came in, is what we have seen in purposely perpetrated trauma-based mind control, that means governmental, and what we see in governmental mind control, that it all starts as satanic ritual abuse. It all starts as SRA, satanic ritual abuse. The child's going to go through the shock and the horrors of satanic ritual abuse that gets them shattered enough, along with incest and sexual abuse, that shattered enough that at age 8, they can start, 7, 8, they can start getting groomed for what is needed to have a split system like a born identity. Okay? So it all starts in SRA. So if someone comes to us and they have fleeting memories of Black Hoods or something, we're just waiting for the rest to show up. Because there has only been, in my 18 years of doing this, one time that it was only SRA. That's how much it goes into the purposeful perpetration. And so what we see very first is to disrupt and destroy the child's sense of self is that they go after the reactive, their attachment centers. They can't attach to anyone. There is no I-thou relationship. Everything is going to be safe and then not safe. Safe and then not safe. So the child says the only thing that's safe is what she builds in her mind.
And they do that by, remember, the not know will have maybe a good daddy in the daytime, but a bad daddy at night. So there's never a time that brain pathway in the brain for attachment can ever be formed.
And so when you have a disruption in attachment, that attachment is this. Attachment is when my nervous system as a mom syncs with a child. And when that child has an emotion, I synchronize with that emotion. I label the emotion. I give that emotion words to her. Oh, you are so afraid. I give comfort to that. The child in fear is back here. I, and with my nervous system and my attachment, bring the child forward to attach her and sense of self. Your sense of self and all the time where you think who you are and who am I is right in this section of your brain. So I'm going to bring this scared child back into here and a connection that there's an us and I get her. She's seen and felt and known, and I'm tracking directly with her emotionality. Okay? So I want to give you an example of what is not attachment. Okay? If Audrey has a big emotion, and I'm not even talking about trauma right now. Okay? I'm just talking about she's got a big emotion. And she goes, you know, I can't believe she has six sons, okay? She's a single mom of six kids, okay? And she'll I can't believe, you know, the kids just aren't listening to me, you know? And I go, well, yeah, well, join the club, okay? So here's her stream of emotions, okay? And I just chomp right through it this way, okay? Attachment is hearing her emotions and getting it in there with her and saying, you know what, it's scared me, not her. I get it. And so that's what attachment is, and that's attachment even for a child. But in order to have the ability to build attachment sites, you need to understand emotions. And in trauma, there's only chaos. And you can't make sense of anything. So all emotions are put out of sight, out of mind. You can't process emotions. So trauma work is working with emotions, attachment, grieving losses, and looking at what we believe about ourselves. Now, when you have a real big pool of emotions and you can't make sense out of that, and you're trying to do the do's and don't the don'ts of a religious system, you're going to end up into a really big conflict. And sometimes it's just easier, even in that context, to dissociate. And when there's all of this going on, that's a really good feeding ground for darkness. So years ago, maybe 18 years ago, this guy came to me and he sat down and he goes, I just drove 3 hours for this session. I've got 17 demons. I want you to get them out of me. And I'm like, dude, the feeding ground is so good. I'm not going in there while they're feeding. I'll help you with the emotionality. I'll help you with where you're stuck grieving. There's so much trauma and losses that this is the breeding ground for some of this. And so to go in there and do a deliverance session, it's not going to be useful. It's going to be a power encounter. And it's just easier to resolve the conflicts, the beliefs, take that feeding ground away, and you'll be able to see, you know what, this is just a belief. It's just, I'm not entertaining this. I image Christ. And it really is. Our folks get to that place and they can differentiate that. After coming through horrible, horrible abuse, they don't know anything other than abuse. There isn't a good day. So the question was, do you work with or find similarities between reactive attachment disorder sufferers and the type of victims you work with? Absolutely. Reactive attachment is a part of the package, working with severely traumatized. The other part of that question is, do you see spiritual demonic connections? And we absolutely, but we work on them being able to discern and to recognize, wow, this is my attachment pain. That's what this is coming from. And in the psychological world, and I don't want you to throw out the psychological world, psychology. I want you to know, with trauma-based mind control, as you, Mike just did an interview with that guy when he was down at Roswell, and the psychological community was very much involved in trauma-based mind control at its inception in this country. Okay, very much so. That research and stuff was all done in the Harvard, Yale, the communities like that, and psychologists and psychiatrists. And I'm not really sure that the guy who is the father of attachment stuff, Bowlby, wasn't one of them. He worked for
Tavistock
Institute of Humanitarian. So I'm not really sure that their research wasn't done. I don't know. All I'm just saying is I wonder. But so in psychology, you know, the advances of being able to see how the brain with the PET scans and the functional MRIs and stuff, you know, fire and work, they can see trauma and how that trauma gets stuck in places and what they need to do with it. So I would say don't throw out the psychology of it. You're just like, you know, some of us got on planes to come here, and the planes aren't in the Bible either. So let's not throw this stuff out. But I want you to be really wise with what's there. And in this, a trauma course we took that was 9 months long, came out of Boston, Bessel van der Kolk's research up there. Some of the trauma therapists, one of the teachers, in fact, she felt that attachment cannot be healed, can't be repaired. And I want you to know, I don't believe that. I think at the core of reactive attachment pain and attachment pain is that you're desynchronized with your own self inside. I think that when you understand you and you're able to just be, know and love yourself and be here inside and accept that and understand, well, I really have attachment pain, where you're separated in here, I think that's how attachment pain heals, and that's what we work with. So if someone's really suffering with attachment pain, they've got a belief that keeps them from their own heart, and we work on that place. Which brings me to the other thing. Dissociation is a continuum. You can just be mowing your grass, driving down the road and buzz out, oh my gosh, here's the exit, oh my gosh, my yard's done, all the way to the fugue state, which is what the perpetrators meet the people, that they really have large chunks of lost time, and they do things when they are not in time. Another part of them is in time. I want you to know, every one of us here dissociates. Every one of us has aspects that are not connected, because that's just how we are. And in the process of any therapeutic process, whether you're sitting in this chair or as a helper or the one being helped, all of us have to recognize where we're at inside, because all of us have separate parts of us, because there's none of us that got through life unscathed. And so that's what trauma does in any way. That's what unresolved emotions do in any way. It's just there. So it's not an us and them with survivors and those of us who are ordinaries. There's not a divide. We all need the same process, and that's to know ourselves and to recognize how blessed we are to image him, and we're just human. Audrey and I often say to people, I don't want you to be a good wife. I don't want you to be a good daughter. I don't want you to be a good employee. I want you to start being human. Because humans are going to get mad. Humans are going to have emotions. You're going to have it. I want you to learn how it is to be human.
Can you elaborate a little bit on that? How do you know yourself?
Like, you can know yourself when you walk into a room and you just feel like you have to puff up and be something different. That you've got to, you know, I've got to make these faces, I've got to do this. You can know yourself when you are out of capacity and say, you know what, my people skills have just died. I need to be alone and I let my nervous system rest a moment. You can feel that your nervous system, like I could feel my nervous system ramped up when we had to get in the car and travel again this morning to get, you know, to do it, done a lot of traveling the last couple of days for this, to recognize your nervous system, to know what you need, and to take care of yourself in that place of what you need. Yeah, here's a good one. Fern, you mentioned in the podcast that evil seeks to vampirize spiritual gifts. What are the examples of this? There you go. That's where you're supposed to.
Well, you have giftings that there's many survivors who can see in the spiritual realm, and they always programmers, darkness always like to take that gifting of seeing and distort it so that a person's in seeing for the darkness. And really, it's in deception. So that gifting gets snagged from the body of Christ and is not used for kingdom purposes. So that's
good. Explain that a little bit, especially with the remote viewing and stuff. With the remote viewing.
Yeah, so part of the trauma-based mind control is in that started with, they have the declassified government documents that show they were purposefully trying to have children become remote viewers. Mike had that 92,000-page document on his website at one point about all of the declassified documents about that. So in some of those documents, they talk about how they prepare a child to be a remote viewer by hurting them, torturing them, getting them out of their body. And all of us can have like that kind of, I kind of watched myself in that moment because it was really scary. That's how they do that for children, to get them out of their body and see outside of where they are. And that's one of the ways that they vampirize a gifting. So it's used for darkness and not for kingdom purposes.
Another one, too, was that they would take someone who just has a natural God-given ability to kind of, you know, see people, read people, kind of get really in tune to another human being. And they have that child know how to read people to, and then use that to be able to learn how to control the masses, you know, with
work a crowd.
Yeah, with telepathy and psychic ability and stuff like that. And this is declassified document. I mean, think about this. 92,000 pages, okay? Declassified document. One of the document, one of the MK Ultra footnotes was in a book, and it talked about how they used a formula in order to get these children to be able to reach the place of psychic awareness. And it says, use whatever the child can give you. So watch if hurting them, if shocking them helps, if deprivation helps, if whatever. And you're reading this, and your mind goes, can't happen, can't be, can't be. But this is a declassified government document to help the children build their psychic awareness to get ready for remote viewing or PSYOP. So these are your prophetic folks. These are your intuitive, kind of like, you remember that was Elijah who the Syrian army was surrounded, the city, and, you know, he said, hey, look at this, and Eleazar said, I don't see it, open the eyes, and so the Syrian army was plastered up against the fortress because the army of the Lord, the host, was behind them. And that's the gifting when we're talking about seeing. That's what they see. And so I really believe, and Audrey as well, we really believe that for some reason, darkness sees this gifting. The church doesn't usually want this gifting. It's all creepy and it's all occultic, and it's not. And so they use it. They vampirize these kids. The kids are taught that this is what they do and this is what they see. And I think this is... these are the most gifted folks in the body of Christ, and we need them for such a time as this. Yes?
I was hearing the first part of the conversation was really centered on the psychology and the biology, and how everything's not a demon, the neural nets, and sort of the explanation for how it all works, right? So it's sort of setting aside this, everything's a garden variety demon, but it's another explanation for, you know, biological. The last one that we're talking about was talking a lot more about these spiritual realities, right? The things that probably press those of us in the mainstream and go beyond what we've heard about or aware of. So there's sort of like, I guess what I'm trying to ask, not very well, is can you help bring those together in terms of helping how you reconcile the fact that, like, this is just a broader range of possibilities than we're used to dealing with?
This is how I think about when you ask the question. In the concoction of making a born identity, someone who's survived trauma-based mind control, what has been used against to dehumanize a human has been tearing at the attachment center, okay? Incest, which tears at the attachment center. Trauma, which is absolutely brute excess against the child's body. And then the government in the 60s brought in the psychological component for PSYOPs and to incorporate that realm into what we do.
What was that?
Would
you just use
PSYOPs? I'm sorry.
Psychological operation.
Warfare. Oh, yeah.
Well, and it was in, was it Nick Redfern's book that the declassified document that our government made contracts with extraterrestrials to experiment on human beings.
I mean, this is, but we're talking, the government did this. I mean, we chuckled because, you know, so all I know is that's what's in the mix. And so that child, who is now an adult, sitting in front of me, this is her world. This is his world. And that's why when they start telling their stories, it sounds crazy. But this is the concoction of what's in this mix. And so, yeah, there is a strong spiritual component. I always go to the place of Revelation 18, where it talks about Babylon is fallen. It starts going over the commodities, you know, frankincense, myrrh, and then the last part is, and the bodies and souls of men was a commodity. And for our government, and this kind of, it wasn't just our government, because we have some people from Germany and other places, and it's there too, they were a commodity. They were a research place. And so the spiritual dynamic, I think, goes back to this cosmic battle of that the sons of God just hate humans. They didn't want them a part of the equation of the family of God. In Mike's manuscript, The Myth That's True, he had a blurb about the Adam and Eve blurb thing, and it really explained that hatred, and that's what every survivor recognizes and understands and knows. I'll read that to you if you want me to read that to you.
I should summarize a couple of things. If you're interested. There's government conspiracy talk that is total nonsense. A lot of it is nonsense. But then there's other stuff that is essentially part of the government record since the 60s and 70s. And part of it is this thing that they're describing where I would say a good resource is if you're interested in this, the book Phenomena. It's a year old. It's by Annie Jacobson. It's a history of government involvement in these types of programs. Government is trying to determine whether psychic ability is real, and if it is, how to exploit it. There's another one called Brainwash. It's a history of government programs involved in drug use to produce altered states for the same purpose. In the 50s, this began during the Cold War as an effort to produce a truth serum. The idea was pretty normal. But if we can come up with a drug that forces people to tell us the truth, then that's great because we can use it on prisoners. But if we're doing it, other countries are doing it too. So we also need to give that to our own people to develop immunity or perhaps an antidote that we can give our people so that if they're ever captured in a covert situation, that they would be immune from the effects of whatever they're being given. So this was actually a weapons program. It just involved drugs. And that was in the years leading up to the discovery of LSD. And I'm not one of these guys that's going to start talking about how the CIA is drug running. Yeah, maybe they are, maybe they aren't. I don't care. What I care about is, you know, what's the documented stuff? I don't really care about the speculation. The documented stuff is they were trying to come up with initially a truth serum and its antidote. And they thought that was useful. Well, as they go down this road and they start experimenting with these things, you get really weird stuff happening to people. Mind-altering stuff, altered states. And so that drew the experimenters, whether they were private industry or some psychologist working at a university who had a CIA contract, whatever, or somebody in the military. It's like, wow, you know, we're learning lots of things about the mind. What else should be tried? And it just mushroomed into all of these sort of derivative programs. And what Fern and Aubrey run into, MKUltra is the most obvious. MKUltra was the subject of a congressional hearing in 1973. It's called the Church Hearings. And the attempt was made to destroy every record of MKUltra. They didn't succeed. There were 18 boxes worth of stuff that got missed, and that's why we know anything about MKUltra. And MKUltra had 100 sub-programs to it. And it was basically trying stuff out on people. Mostly, they had no knowledge of it, although they did solicit volunteers, depending on what the program was. And then learning what happens to people. And I don't want to make it sound innocent, because it wasn't. They're very famous, infamous cases of CIA personnel giving stuff to their own employees just to see what would happen. It's human experimentation is what it is. And so these programs are filtered down in the private industry because they're hiring professors and universities and whatnot, you know, to conduct the experiments. And then those people have graduate students, and then those people have graduate students. And it just, if you're interested in this field of research, you probably have an academic lineage back to one of these original guys in the 50s and 60s. What they're saying is they run into people who have a history in these programs, whether they know it or not. And they're just messed up. And they get this, and the church's impulse is typically to say, well, that person's possessed. No, probably not. It's probably something else that's going on. So they help them with the stuff that's done to them in those kind of situations. That's what they mean by government. It could be a satanic ritual abuse situation where people are just screwed up because of what's done to them as a child. It could be a combination thereof. You know, who knows? There's all sorts of stuff like this going on, whether it's behind closed doors at home or whether it's something going on in the lab. They get the residual after effects of this. And the spiritual component is their argument is that darkness, so intelligent, and supernatural powers, understand what's happening to people and understanding what it does to them. And they will, at times, influence people to do things to them for their own purposes, you know, to get them to be a certain individual, to do a certain thing, or say a certain thing, or go out and start a ministry. And the whole role of ministry is to lead lots of people astray, but just something like that. It's a combination of humans doing really bad things to humans and an intelligent evil getting in on the act.
Yes.
That's essentially what they run into all the time. And as they work with people, their stories just come out. And the issue is not, well, is every detail of the story, like, real? You know, should we assign an investigative journalist? You know, that isn't the issue. The issue is trying to help those people deal with what's going on inside of their head. Whether you could actually trace it to a real-time event, a series of events, or not, really isn't the issue. It's what this person believes and what they were told about themselves and about God and about Christ and about the church. And that's what they're trying to deal with. They would need an army of researchers to go track down the details of this story. That's just not going to happen. And at the end of the day, it's not really important. You know, what's important is how do you deal with the person sitting in front of you who is just barely functional, or they believe that I'm supposed to go out and kill people. You know, they've had people show up at their doorstep. I'm here because I was sent to kill you.
Yeah.
You know, they just... For these two, that's just like, oh, yeah, we had that last week, too. It's like we've heard all this before.
Well, we usually just asked for the assassin.
Yeah.
Just ask for the person.
Yeah, it's not like they don't want to make the impressions that they treated flippantly, because you guys have been in some... You know, pretty hairy situations.
Well, we send an email sometimes, text message this month.
But you know, again, just they're dealing with the fallout of this stuff. Again, whether it's real, completely real, part of the real, all that really isn't what they care about. They're caring about, okay, here's what's going on inside you, and we're going to try to help you deal with it. And again, consider the spiritual dimension of the whole.
And we do see that these really are every person that we have spend time with is very, very gifted. Is very, very gifted in spiritual sensitivity, deep love of Christ, understands mercy. Most of the time, they have the biggest mercy hearts ever. And, you know, I don't know. We never talked to Mike about it, but In the gifting, mercy is like, can't be falsified. You can have a false prophet, a false teacher, but darkness has no way to fake out mercy.
They have none.
They distort mercy, and they twist mercy, and that's what we see in the survivor, that their mercy is so distorted and twisted. And I'll give you an example of that, because you guys are like, give me an example, and I'll give you one. And so a distortion of mercy is you have such a big mercy heart, you've got a 17-year-old survivor, and they see that the 5-year-old little girl that's in the same, you know, program that, you know, has to go get raped next. So the 17-year-old says, I'll go instead of her. So as the 17-year-old is being walked back to the room to be experimented on and raped and tortured, they're mocking her and saying, well, this is what you wanted. This is what you enjoy. This is, you see the distortion of mercy. And that's what they do over and over again. They set it up for the mercy heart to be so crushed so that they do, and then they mock the mercy and distort the mercy of the person, knowing now they know when they're sitting in front of us that that little girl got hurt anyway. That it was really just a twisting and a torsion and torquing of their own heart and stuff. And so that's what we see, that these are just mercy-filled, loving, you know, folks that have lost who they are and they're looking for who they are.
How does it keep you from getting angry? How does it keep you from getting
angry? Oh, I do get angry.
Get angry.
I do get angry. Mm-hmm. I get really angry. Yeah, I do. I, you know, do a lot of self-care in that place. You know, and I there's been times where I you know, outside of the session, has collapsed and said, where's the God of Elijah? You know, where is the God of Elijah? And it's those places now that I can just, you know, see, and I'm sure Audrey's the same, I can just see the love and what's in their heart, so that when the assassins are there, when the, you know, witches are there, and the all the slight, you know, all the cursing comes at us, I just hold, because I can see their heart, and it doesn't matter. You know, I'm not going to shut down. If a witch part is going to come out and start cursing, we're not going to shut them down. We're going to say, I get it. That's the only language that little kid has. I'm not shutting that down.
Only protection.
Yeah. You know, well, usually we're drooling or something. I'll say, look, you're really good. You are talented. You are well-trained. Give me a break. We're going to go get coffee, and we're going to come back, and let's talk. Because I know that you want me to see you, and trust me, you're here. We're glad you're here. We get it. So we just got to get strong coffee.
I have a question. Give us the bad and the ugly aspect inside of the ministry. Can you paint a picture for us of what you would consider, hey, we did our job, we did it right, Jesus came through, God came through, and this person knows the truth and all. You know, paint us a picture of what it looks like to a trauma survivor who was able to actually go through that door of where they were actually. I can't use the word cure, you can't use the word fix. Restore. Yes. So can you paint us a picture of what a successful accident?
Success story, yeah.
Well, in the example that Sharon gave about the survivor, the 17-year-old who gives up herself for the child and then is tormented that she wanted it. This was her. She didn't sacrifice. She wanted it. She wasn't. She just, all of that distortion of mercy, that 17-year-old grew up her entire life believing she was evil. That she was the seed of the serpent. That there isn't any other way that she could possibly be there except for to fulfill her destiny in life was in this life. And when we sit there and in our heart connected in mercy to her and say, no, they deceived you because they never wanted you to know who you really are as an imager of Christ. That's not who you are. Because you did that shows how big your mercy heart really was. So all of it's a lie. And when they see that, they know that all of that is all because the small g gods want to take humans out. A survivor is one that once they see all of that deception, the restitution, revenge, what do we use? To set others free? Magnanimous. They get it. They're the best ones to set every captive free.
For when they see the difference and they recognize the difference in the defilement of having a cosmic thought process, you know, that constant thought, I'm evil, I'm the serpent seed, you know, this is what I deserve, I when they feel that defilement, because they didn't know it was defilement, and they feel the love of God, and the love of God's always been there, because 99% of our folks are born again. They come with knowing the love of God, but just not to these parts that are separated. And when they feel that, we don't have to do theological teaching. They get the spiritual realm. They get that the small g gods are defeated. They get, and that love just kind of, you just see that swirl into the other areas, and integration occurs with an understanding, like, they did that here too. Oh my gosh, and then that's programming there too. I get it. So then now, instead of what they come, the first time maybe that we met them, they were like in this place of just, you know, a lot of protection. Now, you know, 2-3 years later, they're coming, they'll go, okay, I can feel that there's a part of me that really still believes this, and she wants to talk today. And so the process is so much faster because relationship is made. They understand being regulated emotionally. They understand they've got to process this shame. They know that shame is more of a locator than to shut them down and a demotivator. They know all these words. They have all these tools. And they usually have most of the work done before they come to see us. We just now sit with them and we celebrate and say, yeah, that's it. Yep, you got it. Yep, you got it. And so there's ever getting to know who they are. And they're growing and stronger in their own ego strength, their own presentation, that they can be the same person. They have all these folks beside them. You know, their little kids are still there and everywhere. Instead of living like this, not knowing each other, all scattered, they're living like this life and how they want to live. So the kid may need ice cream at 2 o'clock because they're there, but the adult has kids to take care of, and it's all okay. It's not separated. It's not trauma. It's not chaos. It's all there.
Can you define or explain the process of defilement? What happens when that happens?
Okay, so we talked about little child gonna get raped or whatever on an altar, and they ask for Jesus to come, and that doesn't go well. And they say, ask for Lucifer, ask for something else of power. And that child, in total deprivation of ego strengths, overwhelming emotions, in total body in torment and pain, she goes, yes, I'm reached through. It feels disgusting, and she can't stand it, but she can't be powerless, and reaches for that cosmic connection. They know how what they're living in is the yuck and the everything that they're in, but this she'll take because it's more powerful than what's happening in the room.
And I would just pause right there. Do you see, even though she had to go through what was abhorrent to her, did you see what was the motivator? I want to live. I want to live. And so really, she chose to live.
She chose life.
She chose Christ by doing this. I know that sounds harsh. But so when we have her, when we point out this, you don't have to do anymore, you can still just choose life. She never knew that was an option. She only knew that if she wanted to live, she had to feel the harsh defilement and what was abhorrent to her. But when we say, you did this, because she did this, they said to her, look at you. You are so evil. You wanted this. You like this feeling.
This defilement would be like the disdain for humanity.
Yeah.
No, looking at a person and only seeing their weaknesses and all of that.
Do you hear
that's
defilement. This is when she connects to this, she hates enough to have power. She feels this emotion of this evil. And it's so abhorrent to her heart, which is to choose life. And so when she realizes that this motivator was life, that she chose Jesus, they tricked her, they focused on this, she chose life, then she knows, she comes, feels, I did choose life, they tricked me. And it's done. That's the spiritual warfare.
Is it possible to truly be saved, to fully receive God's love, if one is not fully integrated?
Absolutely.
There's only one heart. There's only one heart.
I want all of that. Sure.
You all have one heart.
Yep.
Everyone. Every person.
I'm afraid to ask this question, that where are these little children coming from? How did they get there?
Well, there are incestuous families, and that's they have them all along. There's breeders. Breeders. Women who are just bred to have children. Foster children. Adopted children.
So what is your success rate with all this?
What is our success rate?
Yeah.
How do you judge that?
The definite
who follow through and actually read it.
Do you know what? Everyone that comes to see us,
yeah,
is grateful and overwhelmed with the fact that they have tools, that they're not just sitting in a chair and someone's doing them again. You know, they're like, yeah, okay, I'm done. So the success rate, I would use the words, those who come and say, I've got tools now, I can stay on the journey. I've got my mind back, I'm on the journey. I would say the success rate of that is 100%.
Yeah.
What happens is that it costs money for them to fly to see us, to stay there, to pay us, to do this, that almost 85% that drop out do so because they can't afford it anymore. And so we recently just started a nonprofit. We are not tax exempt yet. We started a nonprofit, and I'm going to be real honest, there is no church in our area that is interested in supporting what we do because of the factor of denial. We even went to Christian businessmen, wealthy, wealthy, wealthy businessmen in our area. And they said, go back, get your degrees, bill insurances, and go to your churches and get help. We're not helping you. So we're at this crossroads now where we shifted everything. We've got a nonprofit. We're waiting for the tax exempt number. And our folks, the drop-off is really, it's high. In fact, we had people that were coming in just in the last 8 weeks. We had three of them cancel 5 days of intensive ministry, only because they're weeping. I'm sorry, we don't have the money. We're a mess. We need to get to see you, but we don't have the money. So that's how we do success rate. Success rate to us is that they're living life, they're understanding their heart, and they have the tools to process emotions and to have understanding about themselves.
Yeah.
Do you have their needs that come to see you that are products of abduction or kidnappings?
It's all part of the same thing. It's all the same
language for trauma-based mind
control. Yeah, that is language for trauma-based mind control.
Yes. A lot of runaways and stuff like that. What are the circumstances
that they come to see us?
Well, that they get drawn into being trafficked and traumatized.
It's family. It's incestuous families. and usually very religious families.
It's just amazing.
Is that what you're referring to when you say satanic ritual abuse, or is that
satanic ritual abuse?
Yes.
No, they all use the terror that the SRA stuff, the satanic ritual abuse, brings to the child, splits their mind really quickly with that supernatural connection.
Is that separate from the tradition?
Well, it can be the same. It can be an incestuous family who practices satanic ritual abuse, and then they prepare the child to go into a governmental type of program.
Now, those people are not born again.
Yes, they are. They're in the church.
They're in the church, but they're not truly born again. They're not. One part of them might be.
Yeah.
I think part of them
is you're talking about perpetrators.
Yeah.
Well, the perpetrators.
Everyone who's trauma-based mind control has been made a perpetrator quickly, so that they can't say, look what you did to me. They make that child quickly do something else so that they're a perpetrator too.
But when you said that they're church people that do SRA, they can't truly be regenerated.
I can't make that decision because a lot of times they're dissociative. They have been traumatized to have a front-back system. And it's not weirded out. It's just how they survived it. Yes, ma'am.
I have two questions. In a perfect world, how, when somebody, like a worst case scenario, comes to you for help, how much time, minimum, would you like to be able to spend with them, and how much money would that cost for them to stay at the home that they need?
The journey for them usually, if they come to us, that really stayed in set 30 years old, really is what we see, that they stay in session. And then, so they've had 30 years of mind control. And the journey, once they understand the process and they, you know, get into the process, depending on where they're at, what their support system is, the journey's a long one. It's a 10, 15 year journey.
Support system, in that sentence, refers to people around them who will help them, you know, live life, when they have.
Just believe them. Just love them. I don't want them to be there. Just love them.
So I guess what would be, like, if somebody wanted to sponsor a person to get them, what would be like a minimum monthly support for that? Like, if you wanted.
If someone would come to see us wherever they are, their flight to get there, we charge $25 a night for them to stay at the house. They have the house, and then it's $120 an hour, and they get both of us for that. So if they're coming for 24 hours, you know, 4 days, we do 6 hours a day, 24 times 120.
You
know,
how many would you say people that you see are themselves perpetrators because of their abuse? And what is your responsibility to the ones that they are perpetrators? If they aren't perpetrators, what they are doing, do you have a place where you can help if they are perpetrators, the people that are perpetrating too long?
Typically, the way that typically the trauma-based mind control, you don't get out of that without being a perpetrator. And so, again, like Mike said, the details and the, you know, all that, I'm not going to do that, because almost everyone that comes to us has an assassin too.
Right.
So all we're going to do is we're going to work with them so that the belief system that's on that part of them, that they're in so much shame and guilt, they just believe that they're damned. So we do not address or move towards, because usually when they come to us, they're typically not actively programming folks. You know, they quit that long ago, and that's what's getting them in trouble.
Okay?
Yeah. That's typically what's happened. Yeah.
That's helpful.
Yeah. Yes.
Well,
question. You know, the LGBTQ issues in the, you know, the world today. Is it a safe bet that some or many people who identify, you know, don't want to be who they were born to be have this dissociative disorder?
I don't know what that correlation is. Okay. I know that with folks who are traumatized and have undergone TBMC, that they aren't supposed to have a specific gender.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is that
it can be interchangeable.
Yeah, they are dehumanized to the point that there's not a specific gender.
And see, some of that is from the child's mind too. If you know, they had to have sex with mom, well, then it was easier to be a boy. Then it didn't have that moral thing. So then they have a boy part. And you know how that works. And they grow up in that defense mechanism. So for them to be lesbian with a boy part that is with a female woman is normal for that child. So for us to make a judgment on that's the sin, that's the... You have no idea what the psychological defense is, and they may not even know it. They're just living out of it.
Yeah, but I don't know what the correlation is of that as far as decision. Yes.
You talk about people coming to you, but there's a lot of people out there that can't come to you. So is there anything in the future about training or something that train people in the ministry how to deal with religions?
Yeah, that is the first thing on our agenda as we're looking at as we made the nonprofit and we're moving in that direction. This is our tension. We have a list right now of 24 people that are really interested that came through the podcast and stuff that want to be mentored by us, whatever teaching we have, whatever we have. And that's really great. We're really fussy. I don't want someone who's intrigued with the story working with people. I need hearts that can feel hearts and go after hearts. The story is the story. It doesn't ever get better. Do you know what I mean? But what does get better is to move forward out and have a different chapter of their life, and that's what we do. So right now, on our desk is we already have the curriculum set up, how we're going to do that. It's just, how do we do that? I don't want, the best way is to have someone sitting there and watch them work with them. I don't want to exploit that survivor. They've had enough exploitation. So, so we're trying to work out that piece. And then out of 24 people, I want a screening process. So I want to know what hearts are best. Because I am not going to say, just because you took the training, I think you're really good at that. I need to know hearts are good. We're very protective of our folks, you know? So, yes, the short answer is absolutely yes. The curriculum's already penciled in. I have a question here that says, how many of these people have been U.S. soldiers?
A high number. Percentage. Very high percentage.
And they did, and they never enlisted.
Yeah.
They never enlisted.
And they never enlisted. They worked as soldiers, and they never enlisted.
And some have enlisted.
Yeah.
But they already had systems before that.
Yeah.
On one of your podcasts, you were talking about the dissociative part of the trauma survivors, and what I found was really interesting and really struck a nerve with me, and made me want to just help you guys, was the fact that you pointed out that when these personalities are being created because of this trauma, that in the secular world, even from many pastors or many psychologists, layman, whoever, they're looking at it like that's a bad thing. We want to get rid of those personalities. And you made the statement on the podcast that that's a gift from God. That's a survival mechanism for God. And I get to understand it. I would like for you to share that with our audience, because that is so profound to me, is that God actually provided a way for people to survive without totally losing their mind. Mm-hmm.
And I think she told it beautifully, actually.
I think you did,
and
too.
That really is. It really is a gift from God. That's why I wanted the mystery, the weirdness of it. It's not weird. It really is a gift of God. All of us can do it. And that these kids, these folks, they just got real good at it. And God's in it. You saw when I demonstrated, she chose life. In the splitting and the choosing, she did it because she wanted to live. That's all. I want to live, so I'm going to make a different part of my mind. That is absolutely Jesus all the way through. Mm-hmm. It's 10 after 4.
I want to throw out one question. One, talk a little bit about the support system. What the problem that is, you know, when you vet people who are interested in being trained, it's part of that aid of whether that person has people on the ground where they live to help, you know, with people that they live with.
Yeah.
In other words, is that a requirement?
Yeah. What we did, what we have sketched out for the training is we have two different things. We do have that those who want to be support people, they're not interested in doing a therapeutic process or a prayer ministry process. They just want support. And in order to be a support person, you need to be able to know your own stuff. You need to understand your own attachment pain, your own stuff. And so we have a little curriculum, you know, penciled out for that. And then we have, because in that role is a lot different. What you're going to be doing for the survivor in that role, you're going to be able to synchronize an attachment and to be able to do regulation. You stay regulated to regulate them. And so if someone comes and they're all upset and they, you know, said, you know, I heard the aliens again, they came for me, and that whatever it is, you're going to be able to say and be able to synchronize with them and not be drawn into the narrative, because your mind goes wacko when you try to hit through the narrative. Oh my gosh, well, if there's an alien, then what if they're getting to see me? And I don't want you to do that. I want you just to be able to stay with the person. That's for mentoring. For the support mentoring, yeah. And to be able to be mentored into doing the work, that's going to be, it's going to be empirical research for trauma. It's going to be understanding what the brain does in trauma. I want you to see when they're in midbrain. I want you to, you know, I know that sounds very clinical, but I want someone, we are not mental health professionals. And we can just, by looking at someone, see that they just went into midbrain, and that they're in a 911 place, and we can help them from that. You can learn that. That's important to know.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the two things, different level. I want to, first of all, say, I'm sorry if we freaked you out, but we're really nice. We're normal.
We are normal.
We love to laugh.
Your eyes got really big, some of you.
And we just love Jesus, period. And so, and we were, I want you to know, we're real excited to meet you folks, and that you're here with us, and we get to be here. And Tammy, thank you. She was so brave to invite us. Tammy, we love you. And thank you so much for inviting us.
Yes.
Are we supposed to call you Dr. Patrick?
Oh, you probably might. Sure.